interpreted injuries that should have made them crumble to ash, but they were no longer creatures of Nero, bound to the living world by his power. They were just humans again, like Luguselwa. They would have to find a new purpose for their remaining years. And I suppose none of them loved the idea of staying loyal to the cause of a dead emperor. "You were right," I told Meg, "about trusting Luguselwa. I was wrong." Meg patted my knuckles.
"Just keep saying that. I'm right. You're wrong. Been waiting months for you to realize it."
She gave me a little smirk. Again, I could only marvel at how much she'd changed. She still looked ready to do a cartwheel for no reason, or wipe her nose on her sleeve with zero shame, or eat an entire birthday cake just because yum. But she was no longer the half-wild, alley-dwelling urchin I'd met in January. She'd grown taller and more confident. She carried herself like someone who owned this tower. And for all I knew, she might. Now that Nero was dead, assuming the whole place didn't burn down. My voice failed me. "Meg, I have to.
I know."
She looked away long enough to wipe her cheek, knocking her glasses cockeyed in the process.
"You have to do this next part on your own, huh?"
I thought about the last time I'd physically stood in the depths of Delphi, when Meg and I had inadvertently wandered there through the labyrinth during a three-legged race.
Ah, those were simpler times.
The situation now was different. Python had grown too powerful. Having seen his lair in my dreams, I knew that no demigod could survive that place. The poisonous air alone would burn away flesh and melt lungs. I did not expect to survive there long myself. But in my heart, I had always known this would be a one-way trip. "I must do this alone," I agreed.
"How?"
Leave it to Meg to distill the most important crisis of my 4,000-year-plus life into a single unanswerable question. I shook my head, wishing I had an unquestionable answer. "I guess I have to trust that I won't screw up."
"Oh, shut it, McCaffrey."
She forced a smile. After a few more moments of putting salve on my wounds, she said,
"So, this is goodbye?"
She swallowed that last word. I tried to find my voice. I seemed to have lost it somewhere down in my intestines.
I will find you, Meg.
Afterward. Assuming
no screw-ups.
I made a sound between a laugh and a sob.
"Yes. But either way."
She nodded. Even if I survived, I would not be the same. The best I could hope for was to emerge from Delphi with my godhood restored, which was what I had wanted and dreamed about for the past half a year. So why did I feel so reluctant about leaving behind the broken, battered form of Lester Papadopoulos?
"Just come back to me, dummy.
That's an order." Meg gave me a gentle hug, conscious of my injuries. Then she got to her feet and ran off to check on the Imperial demigods, her former family, and possibly her family yet to be. My other friends all seemed to understand, too. Will did some last-minute bandaging. Nico handed me my weapons. Rachel gave me a new pack stuffed with supplies. But none of them offered any lingering goodbyes. They knew every minute counted now. They wished me luck and let me go. As I passed, Rack Bling and the troglodyte lieutenants stood at attention and removed their headwear. All 620 hats. I recognized the honor. I nodded my thanks and forged on across the broken threshold before I could melt into another fit of ugly sobbing. I passed Austin and Kayla in the antechamber, tending to more wounded and directing younger demigods in cleanup efforts. They both gave me weary smiles, acknowledging the million things we didn't have time to say. I pushed onward. I ran into Chiron by the elevators, on his way to deliver more medical supplies. "You came to our rescue," I said. "Thank you." He looked down at me benevolently, his head nearly scraping the ceiling, which had not been designed to accommodate centaurs.
"We all have a duty to rescue each other, wouldn't you say?"
I nodded, wondering how the centaur had become so wise over the centuries, and why that same wisdom had escaped me until I had been Lesterized. "And did your joint task force meeting go well?" I asked, trying to remember what Dionysus had told us about why Chiron had been away. It seemed like so long ago. "Something about a severed cat's head?" Chiron chuckled.
"A severed head and a cat. Two different, people. Acquaintances of mine from other pantheons. We were discussing a mutual problem."
He just threw the information out there as if it wasn't a brain-exploding grenade. Chiron had acquaintances from other pantheons? Of course he did. And a mutual problem. "Do I want to know?" I asked.
"No," he said gravely. "You really don't."
He offered his hand.
"Good luck, Apollo."
We shook and off I went. I found the stairs and took them. I didn't trust the elevators. During my dream in the cell, I'd seen myself sweeping down the stairwells of the tower when I fell to Delphi. I was determined to take the same path in real life. Maybe it wouldn't matter. But I would have felt silly if I took a wrong turn on my way to confront Python and ended up getting arrested by the NYPD in the Triumvirate Holdings lobby. My bow and quiver jostled against my back, clanging against my ukulele strings. My new supply pack felt cold and heavy. I held on to the railing so my wobbly legs wouldn't collapse under me. My ribs felt like they'd been newly tattooed with lava. But considering everything I'd been through, I felt remarkably whole. Maybe my mortal body was giving me one last push. Maybe my godly constitution was kicking in to help. Maybe it was the nectar and Mountain Dew cocktail coursing through my bloodstream. Whatever it was, I would take all the help I could get. 10 floors. 20 floors. I lost track. Stairwells are horrible, disorienting places. I was alone with the sound of my breathing and the pounding of my feet against the steps. A few more floors, and I began to smell smoke. The hazy air stung my eyes. Apparently, part of the building was still on fire. Awesome. The smoke got thicker as I continued to descend. I began to cough and gag. I pressed my forearm over my nose and mouth and found that this did not make a very good filter. My consciousness swam. I considered opening a side door and trying to find fresh air, but I couldn't see any exits. Weren't stairwells supposed to have those? My lungs screamed. My oxygen-deprived brain felt like it was about to pop out of my skull, sprout wings, and fly away. I realized I might be starting to hallucinate. Brains with wings. Cool. I trudged forward. Wait. What happened to the stairs? When had I reached a level surface? I could see nothing through the smoke. The ceiling got lower and lower. I stretched out my hands, searching for any kind of support. On either side of me, my fingers brushed against warm, solid rock. The passageway continued to shrink. Ultimately, I was forced to crawl, sandwiched between two horizontal sheets of stone with barely enough room to raise my head. My ukulele wedged itself in my armpit. My quiver scraped against the ceiling. I began to squirm and hyperventilate from claustrophobia, but I forced myself to calm down. I was not stuck. I could breathe, strangely enough. The smoke had changed to volcanic gas, which tasted terrible and smelled worse. But my burning lungs somehow continued to process it. My respiratory system might melt later, but right now, I was still sucking in the sulfur. I knew this smell. I was somewhere in the tunnels beneath Delphi. Thanks to the magic of the labyrinth, and/or some strange sorceress high-speed link that connected Nero's tower to the reptile's lair, I had climbed, walked, stumbled, and crawled halfway across the world in a few minutes. My aching legs felt every mile. I wriggled onward toward a dim light in the distance. Rumbling noises echoed through a much larger space ahead. Something huge and heavy was breathing. The crawl space ended abruptly. I found myself peering down from the lip of a small crevice, like an air vent. Below me spread an enormous cavern, the lair of Python. When I had fought Python before, thousands of years ago, I hadn't needed to seek out this place. I had lured him into the upper world and fought him in the fresh air and sunlight, which had been much better. Now, looking down from my crawl space, I wished I could be anywhere else. The floor stretched for several football fields, punctuated by stalagmites and split by a web of glowing volcanic fissures that spewed plumes of gas. The uneven rock surface was covered with a shag carpet of horror. Centuries of discarded snake skins, bones, and the desiccated carcasses of... I didn't want to know. Python had all those volcanic crevices right there, and he couldn't be bothered to incinerate his trash. The monster himself, roughly the size of a dozen jackknifed cargo trucks, took up the back quarter of the cavern. His body was a mountain of reptilian coils, rippling with muscle. But he was more than simply a big snake. Python shifted and changed as it suited him. Sprouting clawed feet, or vestigial bat wings, or extra hissing heads along the side of his body, all of which withered and dropped off as rapidly as they formed. He was the reptilian conglomeration of everything that mammals feared in their deepest, most primal nightmares. I'd suppressed the memory of just how hideous he was. I preferred him when he'd been obscured in poisonous fumes. His cab-sized head rested on one of his coils. His eyes were closed, but that did not fool me. The monster never really slept. He only waited for his hunger to swell, for his chance at world domination, for small, foolish Lesters to jump into his cave. At the moment, a shimmering haze seemed to be settling over him, like the embers of a spectacular fireworks show. With nauseating certainty, I realized I was watching Python absorb the last remnants of the fallen triumvirate's power. The reptile looked blissful, soaking in all that warm, Nero-y goodness. I had to hurry. I had one shot at defeating my old enemy. I was not ready. I was not rested. I was definitely not bringing my A-game. In fact, I had been so far below my A-game for so long, I could barely remember any letters north of LMNOP. Yet somehow I'd gotten this far. I felt a tingly sensation of power building just under my skin. Perhaps my divine self trying to reassert itself in the proximity of my old archenemy. I hoped it was that, and not just my mortal body combusting. I managed to maneuver my bow into my hands, draw an arrow and knock it. No easy task while lying flat on your belly in a crawl space. I even managed to avoid wanging my ukulele against the rocks and giving away my position with a rousing open chord. So far, so good. Deep breath. This was for Meg. This was for Jason. This was for everyone who had fought and sacrificed to drag my sorry mortal butt from quest to quest for the last 6 months, just to get me this chance at redemption. I kicked forward, spilling headfirst out of the crack in the ceiling. I flipped in midair, aimed, and fired my arrow at Python's head. 33. Seriously, guys? I know my shot was right here. Help me look for it. I missed! Don't even pretend you're surprised. Rather than piercing the monster's skull as I'd hoped, my arrow shattered on the rocks a few feet from his head. Splinters skittered harmlessly across the cavern floor. Python's lamp-like eyes snapped open. I landed in the center of the room, ankle-deep in a bed of old snakeskin. At least I didn't break my legs on impact. I could save that disaster for my big finale. Python studied me, his gaze cutting like headlights through the volcanic fumes. The shimmering haze that surrounded him was snuffed out. Whether he had finished digesting its power, or whether I had interrupted him, I couldn't be sure. I hoped he might roar in frustration. Instead, he laughed. A deep rumble that liquefied my courage. It's unnerving to watch a reptile laugh. Their faces are simply not designed for showing humor. Python didn't smile, per se, but he bared his fangs, pulled back his Tootsie Roll segmented lips, and let his forked tongue lash the air, probably savoring the scent of my fear.
And here we are.
His voice came from all around me, each word a drill bit set against my joints.
I have not quite finished digesting Nero's power, but I suppose it will have to do. He tastes like dried rat anyway.
I was relieved to hear I'd interrupted Python's emperor tasting. Perhaps this would make him slightly less impossible to defeat. On the other hand, I didn't like how unperturbed he sounded, how utterly confident. Of course, I didn't look like much of a threat. I knocked another arrow. Slither away, snake, while you still can. Python's eyes gleamed with amusement.
Amazing. You still haven't learned humility. I wonder how you will taste. Like rat. Like god. They are similar enough, I suppose.
He was so wrong. Not about gods tasting like rats, I wouldn't know. But I had learned plenty of humility. So much humility that now, facing my old nemesis, I was racked with self-doubt. I could not do this. What had I been thinking? And yet, along with humility, I'd learned something else. Getting humiliated is only the beginning, not the end. Sometimes you need a second shot, and a third, and a fourth. I fired my arrow. This one hit Python in the face, skittering across his left eyelid and making him blink. He hissed, raising his head until it towered 20 feet above me.
Stop embarrassing yourself, Lester. I control Delphi. I would have been content to rule the world through my puppets, the emperors. But you have helpfully cut out the middlemen. I have digested the power of the Triumvirate. Now I will digest.
My third shot throat-punched him. It didn't pierce the skin. That would have been too much to hope for. But it hit with sufficient force to make him gag. I sidestepped around piles of scales and bones. I jumped a narrow fissure so hot it steam-baked my crotch. I knocked another arrow as Python's form began to change. Rows of tiny leathery wings sprouted from his back. Two massive legs grew from his belly, lifting him up until he resembled a giant Komodo dragon.
"I see,"
he grumbled.
"Won't go quietly. That's fine. We can make this hurt."
He tilted his head like a dog listening, an image that made me never want to own a dog.
"Ah, Delphi speaks. Would you like to know your future, Lester? It's very short."
Green luminescent fumes thickened and swirled around him, filling the air with the acrid scent of rot. I watched, too horrified to move, as Python breathed in the spirit of Delphi, twisting and poisoning its ancient power until he spoke in a booming voice. His words carried the inescapable weight of destiny.
"Apollo will fall."
"No!" Rage filled my body. My arms steamed. My hands glowed. I fired my fourth arrow and pierced Python's hide just above his new right leg. The monster stumbled, his concentration broken. Clouds of gas dissipated around him. He hissed in pain, stomping his legs to make sure they still worked. He roared,
"Never interrupt a prophecy!"
Then he barreled toward me like a hungry freight train. I leaped to one side, somersaulting through a pile of carcasses as Python bit a chunk out of the cave floor where I'd been standing. Baseball-sized debris rained down around me. One chunk hit the back of my head and nearly knocked me unconscious. Python struck again. I'd been trying to string another shaft, but he was too fast. I jumped out of the way, landing on my bow and shattering my arrow in the process. The cave was now a whirring factory of snake flesh. Conveyor belts, shredder apparatuses, compactors and pistons, all made of Python's writhing body. Every component ready to grind me into pulp. I scrambled to my feet and leaped over a section of the monster's body, narrowly avoiding a newly grown head that snapped at me from Python's side. Given Python's strength and my own frailty, I should have died several times over. The only thing keeping me alive was my small size. Python was a bazooka. I was a housefly. He could easily kill me with one shot, but he had to catch me first.
"You heard your fate,"
Python boomed. I could feel the cold presence of his massive head looming above me.
"Apollo will fall. It's not much, but it's enough."
He almost caught me in a coil of flesh, but I hopped out of the snare. My tap-dancing friend Lavinia Asimov would have been proud of my fancy footwork.
"You cannot escape your destiny," Python gloated. "I have spoken. So must it be."
This demanded a witty comeback, but I was too busy gasping and wheezing. I leaped onto Python's trunk and used it as a bridge to cross one of the fissures. I thought I was being clever until a random lizard foot sprouted next to me and raked my ankle with its claws. I screamed and stumbled, desperately grasping for any handhold as I slipped off the side of the reptile. I managed to grab a leathery wing, which flapped in protest, trying to shake me off. I got one foot on the rim of the fissure, then somehow hauled myself back to solid ground. Bad news. My bow tumbled into the void. I couldn't stop to mourn. My leg was on fire. My shoe was wet with my own blood. Naturally, those claws would be venomous. I'd probably just reduced my lifespan from a few minutes to a few fewer minutes. I limped toward the cavern wall and squeezed myself into a vertical crack no bigger than a coffin. Oh, why did I have to make that comparison? I'd lost my best weapon. I had arrows, but nothing to shoot them with. Whatever fits of godly power I was experiencing, they weren't consistent, and they weren't enough. That left me with an out-of-tune ukulele and a rapidly deteriorating human body. I wished my friends were here. I would have given anything for Meg's exploding tomato plants, or Nico's Stygian iron blade, or even a team of fast-running troglodytes to carry me around the cavern and screech insults at the giant, tasty reptile. But I was alone. Wait. A faint tingle of hope ran through me. Not quite alone. I fumbled in my quiver and drew out ye old arrow of Dodona.
How doeth we, sirrah?
The arrow's voice buzzed in my head. Doeth-ing great, I wheezed. I gotteth him right where I wanteth him.
That bad? Zones! Where are you, Apollo?
Python roared.
I can smell your blood!
Hear that arrow? I wheezed, delirious from exhaustion and the venom coursing through my veins. I forced him to call me Apollo.
A great victory, intoned the arrow. 'Twould seem 'tis almost time.
What? I asked. Its voice sounded unusually subdued, almost sad.
I said nothing.
You did too.
I didst not. We must needs formulate a new plan. I shall go right. Thou shalt go left.
Okay, I agreed. Wait, that won't work. You don't have legs.
You can't hide,
Python bellowed.
You are no god.
This pronouncement hit me like a bucket of ice water. It didn't carry the weight of prophecy, but it was true nonetheless. At the moment, I wasn't sure what I was. I certainly wasn't my old godly self. I wasn't exactly Lester Papadopoulos either. My flesh steamed. Pulses of light flickered under my skin, like the sun trying to break through storm clouds. When had that started? I was between states, morphing as rapidly as Python himself. I was no god. I would never be the same old Apollo again. But in this moment, I had the chance to decide what I would become. Even if that new existence only lasted a few seconds. The realization burned away my delirium. I won't hide, I muttered. I won't cower. That's not who I will be. The arrow buzzed uneasily.
So, what is thy plan?
I grasped my ukulele by the fretboard and held it aloft like a club. I raised the arrow of Dodona in my other hand and burst from my hiding place.
Charge!
At the time, this seemed like a completely sane course of action. If nothing else, it surprised Python. I imagined what I must have looked like from his perspective. A raggedy, teenaged boy with ripped clothes and cuts and contusions everywhere, limping along with one bloody foot, waving a stick and a four-stringed instrument, and screaming like a lunatic. I ran straight at his massive head, which was too high for me to reach. I started smashing my ukulele against his throat. Die! Clang! Die! Twang! Die! Crack spring! On the third strike, my ukulele shattered. Python's flesh convulsed, but rather than dying like a good snake, he wrapped a coil around my waist, almost gently, and raised me to the level of his face. His lamp-like eyes were as large as I was, his fangs glistened. His breath smelled of long decayed flesh.
Enough now.
His voice turned calm and soothing. His eyes pulsed in sync with my heartbeat.
You fought well. You should be proud. Now you can relax.
I knew he was doing that old reptile hypnosis trick, paralyzing the small mammal so it would be easier to swallow and digest. And in the back of my mind, some cowardly part of me, Lester, Apollo, was there a difference? Whispered, yes, relaxing would feel really good right now. I had done my best. Surely Zeus would see that and be proud. Maybe he would send down a lightning bolt, blast Python into tiny pieces and save me. As soon as I thought this, I realized how foolish it was. Zeus didn't work that way. He would not save me any more than Nero had saved Meg. I had to let go of that fantasy. I had to save myself. I squirmed and fought. I still had my arms free and my hands full. I stabbed Python's coil with my broken fretboard so forcefully that it ripped his skin and stuck in his flesh like a massive splinter, green blood oozing from the wound. He hissed, squeezing me tighter, pushing all the blood into my head until I feared I would blow my top like a cartoon oil well.
Has anyone ever told you, Python rasped, that you are annoying?
I hath, the arrow of Dodona said in a melancholy tone.
1,000 times.
I couldn't respond. I had no breath. It took all my remaining strength to keep my body from imploding under the pressure of Python's grip.
Well,
Python sighed, his breath washing over me like the wind from a battlefield.
No matter. We have reached the end, you and I.
He squeezed harder, and my ribs began to crack. 34. Found my shot, took it. Forgot I was tied to it. Down I go. Bye-bye. I fought. I squirmed. I pounded on Python's skin with my tiny fist, then wriggled my ukulele thorn back and forth in the wound, hoping to make him so miserable he would drop me. Instead, his giant glowing eyes simply watched, calm and satisfied. As my bones developed stress fractures, I could hear in my inner ear. I was a submarine in the Mariana Trench. My rivets were popping.
Diest thou not, the arrow of Dodona implored me. The time has come.
Wha? I tried to wheeze out a question, but I had too little air in my lungs.
The prophecy which Python spake, said the arrow. If thou must fall, then so you shall. But first, usest thou me?
The arrow tilted in my hand, pointing toward Python's enormous face. My thought process was muddled, what with my brain exploding and all. But its meaning jabbed into me like a ukulele fretboard. I can't, I thought. No.
Thou must.
The arrow sounded resigned, determined. I thought about how many miles I had traveled with this small sliver of wood, and how little credence I'd usually given its words. I remembered what it had told me about it being cast out of Dodona. A small, expendable branch from the ancient grove. A piece no one would miss. I saw Jason's face. I saw Heloise, Crest, Moneymaker, Don the Fawn, Dakota. All those who had sacrificed themselves to get me here. Now my last companion was ready to pay the cost for my success. To have me do the one thing it had always told me never to do.
No!
I croaked. Possibly the last word I would ever be able to speak.
What is that?
Python asked, thinking I had spoken to him.
Does the little rat beg for mercy at the end?
I opened my mouth, unable to answer. The monster's face loomed closer, anxious to savor my last sweet whimpers.
Fare thee well, friend, said the arrow. Apollo will fall, but Apollo must rise again.
With those last words, conveying all the power of his ancient grove, the arrow closed the reptile's prophecy. Python came within range, and with a sob of despair, I jabbed the arrow of Dodona up to its fletching in his enormous eye. He roared in agony, lashing his head back and forth. His coils loosened just enough for me to wriggle free. I dropped, landing in a heap at the edge of a wide crevice. My chest throbbed, definitely broken ribs, probably a broken heart. I had far exceeded the maximum recommended mileage for this Lester Papadopoulos body, but I had to keep going, for the arrow of Dodona. I hadeth to keepeth goingeth. I struggled to my feet. Python continued flailing, trying to dislodge the arrow from his eye. As a medical god, I could have told him that this would only make the pain worse. Seeing my old Shakespearean missile weapon sticking out of the serpent's head made me sad and furious and defiant. I sensed that the arrow's consciousness was gone. I hoped it had fled back to the Grove of Dodona and joined the millions of other whispering voices of the trees. But I feared it was simply no more. Its sacrifice had been real and final. Anger pumped through me. My mortal body steamed in earnest, bursts of light flashing under my skin. Nearby, I spotted Python's tail thrashing. Unlike the snake that had curled around the leontocephaline, this serpent had a beginning and an end. Behind me yawned the largest of the volcanic crevices. I knew what I had to do. Python! My voice shook the cavern. Stalactites crashed around us. I imagined somewhere far above us, Greek villagers freezing in their tracks as my voice echoed from the ruins of the holy site. Olive trees shuddering and losing their fruit. The Lord of Delphi had awoken. Python turned his remaining baleful eye on me.
You will not live.
I'm fine with that, I said. As long as you die too. I tackled the monster's tail and dragged it toward the chasm.
What are you doing?
He roared.
Stop it, you idiot!
With Python's tail in my arms, I leaped over the side. My plan should not have worked. Given my puny mortal weight, I should have simply hung there like an air freshener from a rearview mirror. But I was full of righteous fury. I planted my feet against the rock wall and pulled, dragging Python down as he howled and writhed. He tried to whip his tail around and throw me off, but my feet stayed firmly planted against the side of the chasm wall. My strength grew. My body shone with brilliant light. With one final defiant shout, I pulled my enemy past the point of no return. The bulk of his coils spilled into the crevasse. The prophecy came true. Apollo fell, and Python fell with me. Hesiod once wrote that a bronze anvil would take 9 days to fall from Earth to Tartarus. I suspect he used the word nine as shorthand for, I don't know exactly how long, but it would seem like a long, long time. Hesiod was right. Python and I tumbled into the depths, flipping over one another, bouncing against walls, spinning from total darkness into the red light of lava veins and back again. Given the amount of damage my poor body took, it seemed likely that I died somewhere along the way. Yet I kept fighting. I had nothing left to wield as a weapon, so I used my fists and feet, punching the beast's hide, kicking at every claw, wing, or nascent head that sprouted from his body. I was beyond pain. I was now in the realm of extreme agony is the new feeling great. I torqued myself in midair so that Python took the brunt of our collisions with the walls. We couldn't escape one another. Whenever we drifted apart, some force brought us back together again like marriage bonds. The air pressure became crushing. My eyes bulged. The heat baked me like a batch of Sally Jackson's cookies. But still, my body glowed and steamed, the arteries of light now closer to the surface, dividing me into a 3D Apollo jigsaw puzzle. The crevice walls opened around us, and we fell through the cold and gloomy air of Erebos, the realm of Hades. Python tried to sprout wings and fly away, but his pathetic bat appendages couldn't support his weight, especially with me clinging to his back, breaking his wings as soon as they formed.
"Stop it!"
Python growled. The arrow of Dodona still bristled in his ruined eye. His face oozed green blood from a dozen places where I had kicked and punched him.
"I hate you!"
Which just goes to show that even arch-enemies of 4,000 years can still find something to agree on. With a great kafroom, we hit water. Or not water, more like a roaring current of bone-chillingly cold gray acid. The river Styx swept us downstream. If you love Category 5 rapids on a river that can drown you, dissolve your skin, and corrode your sense of self all at the same time, I highly recommend a giant serpent cruise on the Styx. The river sapped my memories, my emotions, my will. It pried open the burning cracks in my Lester Papadopoulos shell, making me feel raw and unmade, like a molting dragonfly. Even Python was not immune. He fought more sluggishly. He flailed and clawed to reach the shore, but I elbowed him in his one good eye, then kicked him in the gullet. Anything to keep him in the water. Not that I wanted to drown, but I knew Python would be much more dangerous on solid ground. Also, I did not like the idea of showing up on Hades' doorstep in my present condition. I could expect no warm welcome there. I clung to Python's face, using the arrow of Dodona's lifeless shaft like a rudder, steering the monster with tugs of torture. Python wailed and bellowed and thrashed. All around us, the Styx's rapids seemed to laugh at me. "You see? You broke a vow, and now I have you." I held on to my purpose. I remembered Meg McCaffrey's last order. "Come back to me, dummy." Her face remained clear in my mind. She had been abandoned so many times, used so cruelly, I would not be another cause of grief for her. I knew who I was. I was her dummy. Python and I tumbled through the gray torrent and then, without warning, shot off the edge of a waterfall. Again we fell into even deeper oblivion. All supernatural rivers eventually empty into Tartarus, the realm where primordial terrors dissolve and reform, where monsters germinate on the continent-sized body of Tartarus himself, slumbering in his eternal dream state. We did not stop long enough for a selfie. We hurtled through the burning air and the spray of the abysmal waterfall as a kaleidoscope of images spun in and out of view. Mountains of black bone like Titan scapulae, fleshy landscapes dotted with blisters that popped to release glistening newborn drakens and gorgons, plumes of fire and black smoke spewing upward in darkly festive explosions. We fell even further, into the Grand Canyon crevasse of this horror world, to the deepest point of the deepest realm of creation. Then we slammed into solid rock. "Wow, Apollo, you marvel. How did you survive?" I didn't. At that point, I was no longer Lester Papadopoulos. I was not Apollo. I'm not sure who or what I was. I rose to my feet, I don't know how, and found myself on a blade of obsidian, jutting over an endless churning sea of umber and violet. With a combination of horror and fascination, I realized I was standing on the brink of chaos. Below us churned the essence of everything, the great cosmic soup from which all else had spawned. The place where life first began to form and think, "Hey, I am separate from the rest of this soup." One step off this ledge, and I would rejoin that soup. I would be utterly gone. I examined my arms, which seemed to be in the process of disintegration. The flesh burned away like paper, leaving marbled lines of glowing golden light. I looked like one of those transparent anatomy dolls designed to illustrate the circulatory system. In the center of my chest, subtler than the best MRI could capture, was a haze of roiling violet energy. My soul? My death? Whatever it was, the glow was getting stronger. The purple tint spreading through my form, reacting to the nearness of chaos, working furiously to unknit the golden lines that held me together. That probably wasn't good. Python lay beside me, his body also crumbling, his size drastically reduced. He was now only 5 times larger than me, like a prehistoric crocodile or constrictor. His shape a mixture of the two, his hide still rippling with half-formed heads, wings, and claws. Impaled in his blind left eye, the arrow of Dodona was still perfectly intact. Not a bit of fletching out of place. Python rose to his stubby feet. He stomped and howled. His body was coming apart, turning into chunks of reptile and light, and I must say I didn't like the new disco crocodile look. He stumbled toward me, hissing and half blind. "Destroy you!" I wanted to tell him to chill out. Chaos was way ahead of him. It was rapidly tearing apart our essences. We no longer had to fight. We could just sit on this obsidian spire and quietly crumble together. Python could cuddle up against me, look out over the vast expanse of chaos, mutter, "It's beautiful," then evaporate into nothingness. But the monster had other plans. He charged, bit me around the waist, and barreled forward, intent on pushing me into oblivion. I couldn't stop his momentum. I could only shuffle and twist so that when we hit the edge, Python tumbled over first. I clawed desperately at the rock, grabbing the rim as Python's full weight almost yanked me in half. We hung there, suspended over the void by nothing but my trembling fingers. Python's maw clamped around my waist. I could feel myself being torn in two, but I couldn't let go. I channeled all my remaining strength into my hands, the way I used to do when I played the lyre or the ukulele, when I needed to express a truth so deep it could only be communicated in music. The death of Jason Grace, the trials of Apollo, the love and respect I had from my young friend Meg McCaffrey. Somehow I managed to bend one leg. I need Python in the chin. He grunted. I need him again, harder. Python groaned. He tried to say something, but his mouth was full of Apollo. I struck him once more, so hard I felt his lower jaw crack. He lost his grip and fell. He had no final words. Just a look of half-blind reptilian horror as he plummeted into chaos and burst into a cloud of purple fizz. I hung from the ledge, too exhausted to feel relief. This was the end. Pulling myself up would be beyond my ability. Then I heard a voice that confirmed my worst fears.
35. Hanging with my peeps, hanging by my fingertips. It's the same, really. I told you so. I never doubted those would be the last words I heard. Next to me, the goddess Styx floated over the void. Her purple and black dress might have been a plume of chaos itself. Her hair drifted like an ink cloud around her beautiful, angry face. I wasn't surprised that she could exist here so effortlessly, in a place where other gods feared to go. Along with being the keeper of sacred oaths, Styx was the embodiment of the river of hate. And as anyone can tell you, hatred is one of the most durable emotions, one of the last to fade into existence. I told you so. Of course she had. Months ago at Camp Half-Blood, I had made a rash oath. I'd sworn on the River Styx not to play music or use a bow until I was a god again. I'd reneged on both counts, and the goddess Styx had been dogging my progress ever since, sprinkling tragedy and destruction wherever I went. Now I was about to pay the final price. I would be canceled. I waited for Styx to pry my fingers from the obsidian ledge, then give me a raspberry as I plummeted into the soupy, amorphous destruction below. To my surprise, Styx wasn't done talking. "Have you learned?" she asked. If I hadn't felt so weak, I might have laughed. I had learned, all right. I was still learning. At that moment, I realized I'd been thinking about Styx the wrong way all these months. She hadn't put destruction in my path. I'd caused it myself. She hadn't gotten me into trouble. I was the trouble. She had merely called out my recklessness. "Yes," I said miserably. "Too late. But I get it now." I expected no mercy. Certainly I expected no help. My little finger slipped free of the ledge. 9 more until I fell. Styx's dark eyes studied me. Her expression was not gloating exactly. She looked more like a satisfied piano teacher whose 6-year-old pupil had finally mastered Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. "Hold on to that, then," she said. "What, the rock?" I murmured. "Or the lesson?" Styx made a sound that did not belong at the brink of chaos. She chuckled with genuine amusement. "I suppose you'll have to decide." With that, she dissolved into smoke, which drifted upward toward the airy climes of Erebos. I wished I could fly like that. But alas, even here at the precipice of non-existence, I was subject to gravity. At least I had vanquished Python. He would never rise again. I could die knowing that my friends were safe, the oracles were restored, the future was still open for business. So what if Apollo was erased from existence? Maybe Aphrodite was right. 11 Olympians was plenty. Hephaestus could pitch this as a reality TV show. 11 is enough. His streaming service subscriptions would go through the roof. Why couldn't I let go then? I kept
clinging to the edge with stubborn determination. My wayward pinky found its grip again. I had promised Meg I would return to her. I hadn't sworn it as an oath, but that didn't matter. If I said I would do it, I had to follow through. Perhaps that was what Styx had been trying to teach me. It wasn't about how loudly you swore your oath or what sacred words you used. It was about whether or not you meant it, and whether your promise was worth making. Hold on, I told myself, to both the rock and the lesson. My arms seemed to become more substantial. My body felt more real. The lines of light wove together until my form was a mesh of solid gold. Was it just a last hopeful hallucination? Or did I actually pull myself up? My first surprise, I woke. People who have been dissolved into chaos typically don't do that. Second surprise, my sister Artemis was leaning over me, her smile as bright as the harvest moon. "Took you long enough," she said. I rose with a sob and hugged her tight. All my pain was gone. I felt perfect. I felt, I almost thought, like myself again, but I wasn't sure what that even meant anymore. I was a god again. For so long, my deepest desire had been to be restored. But instead of feeling elated, I wept on my sister's shoulder. I felt like if I let go of Artemis, I would fall back into chaos. Huge parts of my identity would shake loose, and I would never be able to find all the puzzle pieces. "Whoa there," she patted my back awkwardly. "Okay, little fella, you're all right now. You made it." She gently extricated herself from my arms. Not a cuddler, my sister. But she did allow me to hold her hands. Her stillness helped me stop trembling. We were sitting together on a Greek-style sofa bed in a white marble chamber with a columned terrace that opened onto a view of Olympus, the sprawling mountaintop city of the gods, high above Manhattan. The scent of jasmine and honeysuckle wafted in from the gardens. I heard the heavenly singing of the nine muses in the distance, probably their daily lunchtime concert in the Agora. I really was back. I examined myself. I wore nothing but a bedsheet from the waist down. My chest was bronze and perfectly sculpted. My muscular arms bore no scars or fiery lines glowing beneath the surface. I was gorgeous, which made me feel melancholy. I had worked hard for those scars and bruises, all the suffering my friends and I had been through. My sister's words suddenly sank in. "Took you long enough." I choked on despair. "How long?" Artemis's silver eyes scanned my face, as if trying to determine what damage my time as a human had done to my mind. "What do you mean?" I knew immortals could not have panic attacks, yet my chest constricted. The ichor in my heart pumped much too fast. I had no idea how long it had taken me to become a god again. I'd lost half a year from the time Zeus zapped me at the Parthenon to the time I plummeted to Manhattan as a mortal. For all I knew, my restorative siesta had taken years, decades, centuries. Everyone I'd known on Earth might be dead. I could not bear that. How long was I out? What century is this? Artemis processed this question. Knowing her as well as I did, I gathered she was tempted to laugh, but hearing the degree of hurt in my voice, she kindly thought better of it. "Not to worry, brother," she said. "Since you fought Python, Only 2 weeks have passed. Boreas the North Wind could not have exhaled more powerfully than I did. I sat upright, throwing aside my sheet. But what about my friends? They'll think I'm dead. Artemis studiously regarded the ceiling. Not to worry. I sent them clear omens of your success. They know you have ascended to Olympus again. Now please, put on some clothing. I'm your sister, but I would not wish this sight on anyone. I knew very well she was just teasing me. Godly bodies are expressions of perfection. That's why we appear naked in ancient statuary, because you simply do not cover up such flawlessness with clothing. Nevertheless, her comment resonated with me. I felt awkward and uncomfortable in this form, as if I'd been given a Rolls Royce to drive but no car insurance to go with it. I'd felt so much more comfortable in my economy compact Lester. Yes. I gazed around the room. Is there a closet or... Her laughter finally escaped. A closet. That's adorable. You can just wish yourself into clothes, little brother. I knew she was right, but I felt so flustered I even ignored her little brother comment. It had been too long since I'd relied on my divine power. I feared I might try and fail. I might accidentally turn myself into a camel. Oh, fine, Artemis said. Allow me. A wave of her hand, and suddenly I was wearing a knee-length silver dress, the kind my sister's followers wore, complete with thigh-laced sandals. I suspected I was also wearing a tiara. Perhaps something less huntery. I think you look lovely. Her mouth twitched at the corner, but very well. A flash of silver light, and I was dressed in a man's white chiton. Come to think of it, that piece of clothing was pretty much identical to a hunter's gown. The sandals were the same. I seemed to be wearing a crown of laurels instead of a tiara, but those weren't very different either. Conventions of gender were strange. But I decided that was a mystery for another time. Thank you, I said. She nodded. The others are waiting in the throne room. Are you ready? I shivered, though it should not have been possible for me to feel cold. The others. I remembered my dream of the throne room. The other Olympians gambling on my success or failure. I wondered how much money they'd lost. What could I possibly say to them? I no longer felt like one of them. I wasn't one of them. In a moment, I told my sister. Would you mind? She seemed to understand. I'll let you compose yourself. I'll tell them you'll be right in. She kissed me lightly on the cheek. I am glad you're back. I hope I won't regret saying that. Me too, I agreed. She shimmered and vanished. I took off the laurel wreath. I did not feel comfortable wearing such a symbol of victory. I ran my finger across the gilded leaves, thinking of Daphne, whom I had treated so horribly. Whether Aphrodite had cursed me or not, it was still my fault that the blameless naiad had turned herself into a laurel tree just to escape me. I walked to the balcony. I set the wreath on the edge of the railing, then ran my hand across the hyacinth that grew along the lattice. Another reminder of tragic love. My poor Hyacinthus. Had I really created these flowers to commemorate him, or just to wallow in my own grief and guilt? I found myself questioning many things I had done over the centuries. Strangely enough, this uneasiness felt somewhat reassuring. I studied my smooth, tan arms, wishing again that I had retained a few scars. Lester Papadopoulos had earned his cuts, bruises, broken ribs, blistered feet, acne. Well, perhaps not the acne. No one deserves that. But the rest had felt more like symbols of victory than laurels, and better commemorations of loss than hyacinths. I had no great desire to be here in Olympus, my home that was not a home. I wanted to see Meg again. I wanted to sit by the fire at Camp Half-Blood and sing ridiculous songs, or joke with the Roman demigods in the Camp Jupiter mess hall, while platters of food flew over our heads and ghosts in glowing purple togas regaled us with tales of their former exploits. But the world of demigods wasn't my place. I had been privileged to experience it, and I needed to remember it. That didn't mean I couldn't go back to visit, though. But first, I had to show myself to my family, such as they were. The gods awaited. I turned and strode out of my room, trying to recall how the god Apollo walked. 36. Hooray! Yippee! Yay! Apollo is in the house. Hold your applause, please. Why so big? I'd never really thought about it before, but after 6 months away, the Olympian's throne room struck me as ridiculously huge. The interior could have housed